sun is out late. Hands in the water, a mirror to my face. Life feels timeless, as if she is mine to keep. As if things are meant forever, as if she's mine to keep.
So welcome to another episode of Yaka FM podcast. Today I have a wonderful guest in the studio, a friend, a collaborator, and a beautiful artist and producer from Germany, based in Berlin, and her name is Johanna Amelie. Welcome, Johanna.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So nice to have you today. And thank you for this beautiful new song that you just performed live in the studio that will be presented at BBC Radio 1 on what date?
On 23rd of May.
23rd of May, what time?
I can't remember. I think 12.
Around 12.
Around 12, yeah.
So everybody just tune in around 12 on the 23rd of May to BBC Radio 1 to listen to Johanna again from BBC Radio 1 studio, and you will have an interview there as well.
Yes.
Nice. Yes. So I'd like to start today with a little bit of your background and your childhood and how you got to be on this journey and be here in my studio. So I'm curious, so when you were growing up, what were you exposed to? What kind of music? What inspired you? Why did you start playing the piano? How did that come about?
So when I was very young, I was introduced to the violin by my mom because she played violin and she taught me how to play violin when I was only 3 years old. So that was my first instrument. And I really enjoyed playing music with my mom. And she had this like kids group where we'd play together. And these are my first memories, like when it comes to experiencing music, I guess. And the music I was listening to as a child was basically the music that my parents were listening to. And my mom listened to all sorts of classical music like Mozart or Bach. And my dad also did that. He played viola. but he didn't do that for a living. He just played that for fun. And he was really into, I remember that we listened to Queen and all sorts of rock bands while driving in the car. So I was also being introduced to, yeah, pop and rock music through my dad, and more of the classical world through my mom. And then my grandparents are also musicians. They play the harp, and my grandfather played the cello. And I sometimes went to see them perform somewhere. So I think for me, it was, music was a big part of our family life. And I always had it as a red thread throughout my teenage years as well. Because when I was, I think when I was 10, I learned the piano, and then I learned guitar and saxophone.
Wow.
And I had always, there was always one instrument that I was learning, but I never really planned to do that professionally. It was just like part of my world to have an instrument that I could express my feelings with. Yes.
And did you play at home with your parents as well? Would you play together?
Yes. And I played with my sister as well. She played the cello.
Wow. We did
like little sessions together. Yes.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so you started playing piano at the age of 10. And when did you start writing songs?
I think I remember I was writing songs with my piano teacher. Like when I was a child, he introduced me to... He said, why don't you come up with a little story about something that you're interested in, and then we find some nice chords to it, and then you tell us about it and you can sing to it. Like, it was really nicely introduced to me that you can also create your own little pieces of music when you are learning an instrument.
Yeah.
But then later when I was turning 17, and then a friend of mine gifted me a CD by Regina Spektor, and I listened to it like probably 200 million times. And then I had a role model, I guess. Like, this was a singer-songwriter that I loved so much. So I learned her songs. Like, I learned how to play her songs on the piano, and I sang her songs. And then I think I started writing my own little songs on the piano. And after school, I decided to study music production and songwriting and singing. So yeah, when I was 19, I also then started learning these things properly.
And you started writing in English?
I started writing in English because I think at the time I only listened to American, British, and songs with English lyrics. And I think that was my that became the language of music. I didn't really think about it so much. But when I moved to Berlin, I was also involved in a international singer-songwriter scene. So we would speak English together, like the people that I was working with. So it came, it felt natural to use this language for my songs. I think the language and the lyrics are just another instrument in a song, and the languages all sound different. So...
Yeah.
I think you can use any language that you know of to write, to make songs. But just recently I started another band project called Momcore with my friend. And when we first started writing songs, we were like, okay, this time this whole project is about like circles around the topic of motherhood and so let's write in our mother tongue. Like, this makes sense. So we started writing in German, and it turned out really nicely. Like, it's true that it does change the way you write or what you write about when you have such a direct access to the experiences that you're referring and like situations that you're referring to.
Yeah.
And That's really cool. And I also enjoy lots of bands with German lyrics. I think there's great songwriters and great bands in Germany that use German lyrics, that write in German, and it sounds nice. It's I'm really open to all of that. Just for my solo project, I think the music that I'm making, like also musically, it's like rooted in folk and, you know, like indie music. So yeah, for me, that suits, English suits well for that style.
Yeah. And also it opens up, I guess, more possibilities with songs in English to have more like an international career, I guess.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Like, music. Because yeah.
Still, it's like that. Yeah.
It's really like that. Like, you can't really go to London and introduce your German songs. I think people will probably not be super interested. But yeah, for the international career that I was aiming for, it was also useful to have like an international sound or international lyrics that people can understand. And in the past, it's true that my songs got me to quite a lot of places outside of Germany. And I was even performing. Yeah, I was probably performing more outside of Germany than I did in Germany, within Germany. Yeah.
Yeah, you've been to Africa.
Yeah, I played in Ghana. Canada. I was in Ghana twice with Goethe Institute for some projects and played with a Ghanaian band. That was one of the highlights, I think, of my career. And I also played in New Zealand and England and France and
Canada
recently. Yes, Canada.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
But like coming back to your family and your upbringing, you felt like supported musically, encouraged.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I felt supported and encouraged. But it was also sort of like coming from a musical family. It was like, oh, like when I told my family, like, I want to do this professionally, they were like, okay, well, good luck. They were not like shocked. Like, I couldn't shock anyone with that, or I couldn't. It was just like part of our life. So I think I didn't even realize like that it's something special that I get to play instruments. But of course, it's a huge privilege to have parents that put their resources into, you know, like buying instruments, paying for lessons, driving me to, I remember my dad and my mom were driving me to all these teachers, you know, like it was an investment. And I'm really grateful for that, because it was really the groundwork of what I enjoy doing now as an artist, as a musician. And I especially remember that playing the violin really got me lots of ideas for melodies.
Yeah.
Like, I really like to come up with melodies for songs. And I think I got a storage of melodies in the back of my head that come from like early childhood memories of like learning these things and playing these instruments. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've known you for some years now, and I know that you always hum some melodies, like when nobody's watching or like in between conversation, you're always singing something, like making up melodies. And I find it so, like, you seem to be so free with just doing that. And I think maybe it's got to do also like maybe this encouragement that you felt in the family, that you never had to maybe like hide things like some other artists growing up had to. I felt like they were maybe a little bit ashamed of what they were doing, and maybe they weren't encouraged enough, or the parents couldn't understand why they were chasing that kind of career, or weren't so supportive. But for you, it seems like you're just like, you sing all the time, like these, you're like a bird.
I'm a bird.
Yeah. Like, you're always coming up with melodies, and I find it really beautiful.
Thank you. I think the only thing that is maybe a little bit, has been a bit not so encouraging was that my parents and my grandparents and, you know, like my father's cousin and like all family members, they have a formal classical training. So that means when you study violin or harp, like my mom or my grandmother did, you have to practice like 8 hours a day, like while studying it. And you have to be like, classical music is like an extreme sport, you know, like you have to be in form or it doesn't sound nice. Like, especially violin, if you don't practice, it just doesn't sound nice. And I think I was also feeling a bit intimidated by my family members, they were all so good at what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I either also had to work really hard to get to that level. And at some point I felt like I'm more of a generalist. Like, I'm interested in so many different things. I want to play like 8 different instruments. I want to sing. I want to write songs. I'm also interested in like music technology and theater. Like, I have so many things that I'm interested in. I'm never going to be an expert, like an expert in violin or an expert in something. So I'm the only one in my family who like then decided to do pop music and to write song, like to be a mm-hmm. composer in that sense.
Yeah.
So that was my way of rebelling.
Claim the space.
Yeah.
Not have competition within the family.
Yeah. Maybe I felt like I couldn't really step into these. Yeah. Into that, what my ancestors have done, like what they also like sacrificed in order to be, that what they became, you know, like professional, classical, musicians. But I think that's every musician, every artist has their journey of like navigating what they want to do and like, yes, I know people that have never had any formal training and they didn't study music and they're like incredible at what they're doing. So
yeah,
I think we're all coming from very different starting points. And then, it's up to ourselves, like how much we can dedicate into our like, craft and songs. And
yeah,
I think songwriting and singing songs is what I enjoy doing most. I could do that every day, the whole day long, and I would be satisfied, you know, with my life. Everything else is a part of, you know, everything else I do is sort of, part of this work, and this career. But if I could choose, I would just do that.
Mm.
I'd love to do only that.
So. Mm.
But I also, I really enjoy collaborating with others. Like I like writing with others. I like performing with others. It's not as if I need to be on my own too. Yeah.
Ever since I've known you, you've been working with so many different people in Berlin and outside of Berlin. Like, it's so special. Like, you're connected to so many different people and you tried writing with so many different people and played with. Yeah, with them, which is also a skill, you know, to be able to engage into all these different relationships with people and create things. And, some people like to do it in privacy and do everything on their own. I think you're the opposite.
I know some singer songwriters say like, I can't write with other people. It's so intimate. I need to do this on my own.
You have this tendency just to reach out to people and like, let's do things together. Let's start something together. Let's write together. And you go to writing camps, these days, right?
In
France and Germany. And
I really enjoy writing camps, but I think not everybody is a match for everybody, you know, like it's still, very nice to meet somebody that you haven't known before. And then you find out that you have the same taste or you appreciate the same, things when it comes to writing lyrics or poems or finding images, because it's not always easy to, it's like with everything, it's just a taste-based work. Like you have to be really, sure about what you like in order to collaborate with others. And when it comes to songwriting, and you work with a group of people where you only feel like I'm making lots of compromises, then I think the song can't be, you know, it can't be really, it won't work because, it's not, I think you have to find a basis with somebody and then you can really create together. I found that person once, like in a camp, in a songwriting camp. I was put together in a group with this artist called Lime. She's from Aarhus. And I remember that we were like immediately in love with each other's ideas. Like, it was so nice. And also, I loved her voice. And then when we were singing together, it was blending nicely. And I was like, I was really lucky. And then I continued working with her, like, for years. Yeah. And we also, during the pandemic, we edited songs for each other. Like, she would send me her songs and ask for advice, and I would send her my song. I would even sometimes send her just some chords, like a draft, and then she would put lyrics to it, and then I would sing the lyrics. It was really cool, like an online collaboration. It worked out well.
Yeah, I've heard some of these songs and they're amazing. They're really beautiful.
Yeah, it was so much fun. But then also sometimes, sometimes it doesn't work. Or you can see in the results that it's not really something. Like, I made some songs with other people where I feel like I can't identify with this fully. Mm-hmm. But maybe I contributed to their work and in the end, it's not going to be part of anything that I'm going to be performing or so. That's also fine.
I guess it's a valuable learning experience, I guess.
I really like to collaborate also with, directors. Like, for example, if you collaborate with somebody who does another art form, like directing a theater play. I was approached by a director last year who asked me to write the music for his play. And it was such a cool work because he found words, like he tried to explain to me, like, these are the colors that I'm seeing. These are this is the story that I want to tell. And then he got me so many, like, visual and haptic clues. And then I created something based on that. And it was so cool. It was also, like a collaboration, but not between two musicians, but between two people that do different art forms. I really enjoy that.
Yeah. So before the interview, we were talking about these songwriting camps, and you just mentioned to me that you were at one this year where there were like 20 songwriters and all of them were female. Mm-hmm. And there were 5 producers, I believe, and all of them were male.
Yeah. I attended this camp and I was quite surprised because when I'm in my Berlin bubble, I really live in a bubble where these gender-based roles are not happening so much anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like I choose to work with lots of female colleagues and people in all different roles, all sorts of roles. And at this camp, I was really surprised because I found it quite interesting that they made the choice to put a team together that is like that.
Yeah.
And apart from that, also my band member, Steph, and I were the only, we were the oldest ones. We were the oldest ones. We were the only parents. Like, nobody else had, had kids or care work to do, as we found out, like, in conversations. And then we had these male producers and I completely respected everyone that I was working with. Like, everybody was so good at this camp, but I found it very surprising that somebody would, in 2026 decide to put a team together like that, like with male producers and female songwriters.
Yeah.
So not very diverse. And yeah, that was interesting. And I think it's probably, like, I don't really have an overview of, like, the whole industry in the world. But when you look at numbers, it's still like that male players in the music industry have much more resources. They make more money. They get more visibility. They get more festival slots, like all this.
Leading,
like,
roles.
Yeah. So there's not much... we're not even close to any gender equality. Like, I think there was a movement that was going quite strongly, but now with the global, like, rise of fascism or whatever that is, it's like a huge backlash. And I think we all need to contribute. Like, if we believe in fairness, justice, and you know, just like basic human rights, I guess.
Yeah.
Then we all need to contribute to creating a music industry that is going towards, yeah, working towards gender equality. And it comes down to all of us, like, who do we pay?
Who do we choose to work?
Yeah. Who do we hire? Yeah. Who do we choose to work with? Who do we support? Who do we take with us to, yeah, on tour and so on?
Yeah. Yeah, I think giving other non-male counterparts a chance to participate in projects, even if they're not as famous or,
yeah,
I don't know, the fastest bass player in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to give that chance. But how is your experience like working in studios with women or working in studios with men? And how do you feel like you're able to express what you want? Or you feel supported, or you feel like you're being heard? Or
there's so many weird characters in the music industry, like lots of narcissists or people that abuse power or people that that you kind of sort of depend on because they've already created a big name and you are a young artist and you try to make a career and you're depending on people who look like gatekeepers to you, you know, like people that could open doors. And if only they worked with you, that could be the big step up towards something else.
To having a career. So
in the past, I made lots of compromises in regards of, I stayed in a work situation that was obviously not healthy or that was obviously not, good for me, for my mental health or for my, or whatever. I stayed in the situation because I believed, I was depending on these people that had more power or more resources, or I signed, you know, like a contract with them and I couldn't get out or something like that, which is my responsibility. Like, I take on the responsibility for that. But then later I came to a point, like now I feel like I'm so much more, because 10 years later, you know, like I've achieved things and I build a name for myself and stuff. But, what I know now is that I don't have to, like, I'm not working with people anymore that I don't feel safe with, you know, like, or positively said, like, I choose to work with people that I feel safe with. And I try to not create situations where I'm depending on a company, a manager, a person that is somehow having a say in my project or in my career.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be as independent as I can as an artist. And I found a way for me personally. It's like, for example, I'm teaching choir workshops and this is how I create a basic income. So I don't need to be depending on, you know, like playing gigs that I don't want to play or paying, you know, like being, yeah, stuck in contracts. And I like to pay freelancers to do stuff for me. For example, if I have a new song or a new album or a new product, I like to pay for a label service or I like to pay for a PR agent that work for me on a freelance basis versus back in the days, I believed that I had to be managed or I had to be signed to a label and stuff. And I think this is something that comes with experience, that you learn how to stay as independent as possible so that you don't fall into these situations. Or if you get into a situation that is not good for you, you can easily get out.
You know, you said like, it's my responsibility. I take on my responsibility. But is it really all your fault that you chose that?
No. I think that situation, when I was in a room with that producer, I should have. So basically, this person and I had agreed that I would pay him so that he would produce my album with me together. And when we were in the studio, finally, he wouldn't let me perform on my own songs. Like, he would tell me that I can't play the guitar on this track of mine, the song that I wrote, because my guitar playing wasn't good enough. And then he played the guitar on my song. And whenever I was recording vocals, he would give me feedback and make me feel small. I don't know if he did it consciously or subconsciously, but I would call that power abuse, because when you are the producer that has the recording gear and that presses record and deletes, you know, like all of
takes
that.
Takes care of your
files.
He's
like the manager of the production.
Yeah.
Then you have a position, a certain position, and you should use that position respectfully. And I've been in lots of other studios with lots of other producers, and it hasn't been like that. Like, I think the best case would be that a producer enables an artist to shine, you know, like,
and
make space, like get out of the way, like get the ego out of the way and make space.
And you have to feel comfortable.
And I have to feel confident, comfortable, encouraged.
Safe. In so
many
ways,
I remember another time when I was with another male producer who was really experienced, and he told me, like, when I was trying to get some guitar tracks down and it didn't really work, he was like, would you like to take 5 minutes just to practice it a little bit? I'll give you some space. I'll leave the room. You practice it, and then I'll track you.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a whole different talk.
Yeah.
But if somebody like dominates the room, dominates the decision taking, and also decides who's going to perform what and when, like on his own, that's really massive. Like, that's, and in the end, I felt really, really bad about my music, you know. This person made me feel so bad about my music and about my album. And after this week, you know, when we finished, I had a panic attack. Like, I couldn't sleep anymore. I was so stressed.
Yeah.
And I think it shouldn't be like that. And this was just a bad combination of people, I guess. This guy and I, we weren't a match. But as you said, like, or as we said earlier, I wonder if the same would have happened if I had been a guy. Like, I wonder if it was because I'm a female artist that is in a room with a male producer, and maybe something is going on consciously or subconsciously, but it's going a very bad direction, you know, like in between two human beings that should be equally having a say in the process.
Yeah.
Like, if I had another team member that would be like, that I could have called and be like, this is going completely wrong.
Exactly,
like, this is, and then this person would have told me, you don't have to do this.
You don't have to be there.
You just get out of there. Like,
you
cancel the work. You don't pay this person. You just cancel it. You go back home and we'll find another solution for your album.
But you didn't get that.
I didn't get that support. As I said, my team was not. In general, I chose a team that was not very suitable for for what I was wanting to do. Yeah.
Yeah. We feel often that it's our fault. And yeah, I also found myself in many situations where I just kept on going because you kind of think, like, I just need to make this work.
Yeah. And I have to be strong and stay in the situation and just somehow get through it. But it's not what, especially when it comes to recording an album, you shouldn't feel like that at all. Like, it shouldn't be like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's also why it's so complicated to move on in your career. When you have all these weird obstacles that you wouldn't have had when you were just like a different gender or something like that.
I think so too.
And it just continues, you know, like, because when you become a mother, there's a whole lots of other things that are being put in your way. Like, if you don't. Because another thing in the music industry is, like, I think for a woman or a flinter artist, it's like, you have to be 25 years old, or you have to look like you're 25 years old, or it doesn't really work for you, because there's no, like, the age, there's no, like, you know, like, when you're old, let's say, like, you're in your 30s or something.
Yeah.
your body is being discussed. When you become a mom, your body is being discussed even more. Your behavior is being discussed. When you have a baby and you go on tour, you're like, she's leaving the baby behind. If you go on tour and you take your baby with you, it's like, it's everything is being discussed about your choices. This doesn't happen to a father.
Yeah.
Nobody knows, nobody cares or nobody knows if anybody in the band is a father, because it's not even discussed about, like, where did you leave your child?
Yeah.
It's surely with the mom, you know, like everybody just thinks that, assumes that.
Yeah. And you're being judged for bringing the child on tour. Yeah. And if you leave the child at home, you're being judged for that.
Yeah.
As
you're
well.
Always being judged, and your body is being discussed, and your look, like the way you look and stuff. So I think all these things are like obstacles, and it's not easy to stay in the music industry, like when you're older than 25 in general, and when you don't want to, you know, like make these trades, like flirt with people in order to get somewhere, flirt with gatekeepers in order to go through doors and stuff.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that, ageism. Yeah. Ageism is more for, it's more a form of discrimination against women, I think. Because, you know, like all these Bob Dylans, and so they're like 100 years old and they're still. But where are all the one Madonna, maybe one Björk? But it's not comparable to the amount of guys that are still around, like when they're older than 30 years.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think.
But a lot of them just stopped having a career.
Yes. And I think lots of people also stop having a career when they become a mom. So that's what I see, because people usually become a mom like in their late 20s or late 30s. And that's when most careers take off, you know?
Yeah.
That's the same timing for that.
Yeah.
And I think this is why, at least in Germany, all the festival lineups look the way they look, like 5% female or Flinter artists in the lineup. Because in order to get a proper gig at a big festival, you have to have a career built for probably like 5 years,
traction,
10 years.
Yeah.
Like you're in the middle of your career, and that's the same period where people then decide to start a family or something. And then it's so hard to get back to the, like, because when you leave the industry for, even if it's just 6 months, you're sort of out. You like can't go back the way you were. And then also if you have a small child that's depending on you, it's much more hard to tour, to work at night, to work these incredible hours that the music industry is suggesting, you know, like overworking and like working all the time and being available all the time.
Yeah.
And that's been so interesting, like the past 3 years or 4 years for me, when motherhood like became a part of my life, to see that there's other parents in the music industry and I can connect with them and I can change these things. Like, for example, with my band colleague, we always work in the mornings now, and we convinced the producers and engineers that we're working with to start working with us at 9 a.m. This is like not a time where you work in the music industry normally, you know, but we have to kind of work within the kindergarten hours. So while our kids are being taken care of in the kindergarten. So, and we asked for it, you know, it's like not given to you. It's like, but we asked for it. And now we have these, like, again, these allies that are like, okay, we want to work with you. We want to do this. So yeah, I'm going to get up at 9 for a week and then work till 3 and then I'm done. And then we also got the feedback, like, this is actually nice. I have, like, you know,
the rest
work
of the
is done at 3 and then I just like do whatever I want in the end. And we also like managed, we recorded an album, we played gigs, we did that. Like, it's more difficult, but it's doable. And another thing that I want to point out, that this is, it's not easy, and we need to talk about it, and we need to also talk about it with, you know, like all these people that have labels, that create festivals, that create studios and stuff, that these working hours need to be reconsidered. Last year I played shows at 4 p.m. Like I played lots of shows that were family concerts, and I invited my audience, and I told them, you can also bring your kids.
Yeah.
And this was so well received, because people were like, oh, cool, I can go to the show. I also have care responsibility.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to bring my kid along, and yeah, then we can all see, and kids could get in for free, you know, like,
yeah.
And then we offered like noise cancellation, like protection for kids. And yeah, then the families came, and I had like, there were two experiences where we had like big audiences, and it worked out really well. And I can see that there's like a need for that. Like I need, the music industry needs to adapt to the realities of the people that work within the music industry.
Yeah.
We need to talk about it. We need to explain what we need and what, yeah, we want. And we need to create our own, like we have to create examples. For example, like these concert series that I started. It's just, but I also respect that some parts of the music industry are reserved for adults. And I think it could be also a solution that you don't bring your child, but you get support, so you can pay somebody who stays with your child, you know, like something like that, like some, yeah, yeah, more grants like that, or more
structural and financial support
like that.
Yeah.
Because if you are a DJ or something like that, and you work at night, or, yeah, you play a festival gig, it's probably not a good idea to bring your baby, you know, like in yeah, these environments.
Yeah.
And I respect that there's environments that are not for kids and stuff. But I feel inspired by Italian culture. Like when it comes to concerts or events in Italy, I saw, when I was in Sicily, for example, I saw the whole family being out at night, you know, like grandma,
yeah,
granddad, kids, parents, everybody's out there staying up and dancing, you know, on these like piazza. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Germany, we have like the generations are so separated.
Yeah.
And this is also comes back to these like ideal age of 25. If you don't, yeah. And then some things are just not accessible for certain members of society, you know, and this is again a bigger structural problem or issue.
Yeah.
I'm really curious about, yeah, this next generation and what they're going to be doing and what is going to be changed by them. I think in our generation, I don't really see so much change on that. Just when it comes to my role models, because who should I be looking up to when I, yeah, turn 40 or 50 or 60? Like, can I still be a musician? Like, can I still do what I do now? It's like, I don't have it. I can look at Patti Smith or PJ Harvey and I see that they're still doing music, but there's, as I said, there's like four or five musicians that I can see that are, yeah, still working in, yeah, pop music. And they're over 30, you know. And this German artist, Judith Holofernes, she wrote a great book about that I can really recommend if any of the listeners are no German.
But all of that, all of these realizations took like 15, 20 years.
Yeah, and it was painful.
Of doing things and making mistakes and getting into, obviously, like these situations that you're just trying to describe. And a lot of the gatekeepers that we still have in the industry
are men. Yes.
And I think it's like this way of sort of moving ahead with your career and having to work with people who can be great, but also with some men who end up abusing their power and not,
yeah,
like, giving you space and like thinking that they know
yeah,
best,
yeah,
and they are not able to listen, and they sometimes, you know, sometimes when you're alone with somebody in the studio, things can get a bit strange.
Yes.
And I think with lots of women, I think simply we are more prone to hold a space for other people.
I agree.
And have empathy and listen to other people. And sometimes it happens if we end up speaking too much or being too loud that we are called emotional and bitchy.
Yeah.
So I think we've learned to not do that and try to be conducive to others and sort of put other people up on the pedestal.
Yeah.
And that happens to be a guy in the studio very often.
Yeah.
Or when you're touring and when you're, you know, coming to clubs. And I mean, I worked as a live sound engineer for many years and I would come to a club and there would be a house tech, a guy, you know, usually a bit older, but like how to position myself in that relationship when they definitely know that they think they know everything better.
Yeah.
And so how do I handle that situation? Do I argue or do I confront them, or do you behave more in a way that, you know, you make them feel good so they do things for you the way you need them to happen? It's like all of these things that are so, you know, we normalize them.
Yeah.
I think. And, but then after some time, you realize that it shouldn't be like that because it's just so much extra burden and work apart from the actual work that you have to do, which is performing, which is recording, which is getting songs produced. And
you're wasting energy.
You're wasting energy and sometimes also resources. Like, for example, if you paid something in advance.
Yeah.
You know, and you go to a studio and you find yourself in a situation that is not supportive for you, where the lines get blurry and then you might end up blaming yourself for that. Or maybe you were too open or too warm or too friendly. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I just remembered a situation back at the theater where I worked. And so I was like the head of the music department for that production. Like I wrote the songs for the play. I trained the actors, the actresses to learn the songs that I had written. I did, you know, also like the little sound design bits. And I produced all of that. And I've worked with the director and with the team, with the cast. And then there was also this sound engineer his job was to do the sound in the play, you know, like take my music production and play the music in the right moment while the play was going, you know, like that was his job. And he, in the beginning, he was really friendly with me, but then I think he tried flirting with me and I didn't react to that because I was not at all, I was working there, you know, and he then noticed that I was not flirting back. And then he got really pissed off and he started being unprofessional. Like he then tried to manipulate my work. He tried to change the stuff that he tried to change my music. He said, it's not good enough. I have to tweak some frequencies here. I have to add a delay here. And I changed this one sound. What do you think? He asked the director, like, I changed some of her ideas. I replaced them with my ideas. And I was like, this is not normal. This is not what you should be doing. And I talked to him. But then I was lucky enough that even the cast and the director, they immediately realized what was going on.
Yeah.
And then he was called for like a talk, like, you know, like with the director, and he really had my back. Like I told him, this is uncomfortable. Do you also get the vibe that something's wrong? Like he's not collaborating with me or he's not like respecting my position.
Yeah.
And everybody, totally got my back and it was super old fashioned, you know, like I felt like, okay, this hasn't happened to me in a long time. Again, like this was outside of Berlin in a small town.
Yeah.
So I think every time when I leave my bubble, like the Berlin bubble, stuff like that happens. And then I'm like, okay, I have to put on a warm jacket, you know, like if I want this position to be. And it's, as you said, like you said, it's really like unnecessary shit. Like it makes you feel I mean, I'm now with the experience that I have, you know, like I already had lots of good feedback for stuff that I'm doing. I feel confident. So I don't feel like I'm not doubting myself in a situation like that. I'm not like, oh, maybe I should have been more friendly, or maybe it's my fault that he's so pissed. So the way I see it, and also the way the team saw it, was like, I was being professional. I was just doing my work. And so I totally know what you mean, like what you're talking about. And if you're not as lucky as I was, like if you're surrounded by a team that doesn't see it, that gaslights you, and that's like, you don't, it's not that bad, and then it's like major stress, I think. And I also was in a situation with a music producer once, was just he and, him and me in a room for days. And I think in the end, like I felt so, uncomfortable, and I just should have left. Like it, now I know I should have left after 2 days because it was not working out for me. I didn't feel good about the work. I didn't feel good about the communication. I didn't feel good about things that were going wrong. Stuff happened that we didn't agree on. Like,
so he wasn't listening to you.
He wasn't listening to me. I felt like I was not. So we were producing my album, but I didn't feel like I was a part of it, you know? I was just there, like in the room, and he would like work on stuff, and I didn't have a say, and that felt really bad because I was paying him. Yeah. I think there's lots of allies. There's also lots of male colleagues that see that problem and that support, have supported me throughout my career. And I also have lots of people in my team that really, that really support me and that really work for me. So I think it's not like, you know, like men against women. It's just like, who are the people that see the structures, that see discrimination, that see anti-feminism, that see like all this stuff that is going on?
Yeah.
And who are the people that ignore it and just live on their privileges, like that don't want to leave the privilege of, living in a world where it's everything stays the way it always was because it gives them advantages.
And they stay in power.
They stay in power, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's that.
Yeah, I guess, choosing the people that you want to surround yourself with, that support you, is really important in the music industry. So I think, if I was to give an advice to myself, to my previous self, you know, the sooner you find those people, stay with them and nurture that relationship and ask for advice and share your stories and like, don't be ashamed of talking about, you know, the experiences.
Yeah.
But like if you were to give an advice to your younger self, what would that be?
It'd probably be the same advice.
Yeah.
And it would be take your time. Like take your time to decide what you want to do and base your decisions on your instincts and not on what people tell you don't choose people to work with based on their status, like status. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Because it does. You should choose your team based on your instinct, like what your instinct tells you. Is this a person that I share values with? Is this a person that I can trust? And spend more time on getting to know them.
Yeah.
I think this is how you build. But these are more like, you know, the soft skills that you need in the music industry, like how to create good work relationships from freelancer to freelancer, because most people are freelancers or business owners in the music industry. It's not as if you have a job and you stay in the job forever. It's like, you have to build
and also
a team.
And also like in the in the beginning of some like our careers, we didn't really have much money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have to identify people that love what you do and you mm-hmm. love what they do, and nurture that relationship, also a friendship.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, you build something also together that can then be financially sustainable.
Yeah.
But create that infrastructure of people that support you.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as possible. Don't think you can do everything on your own. You cannot.
No, you cannot.
Yeah.
But I think it also comes to build a good relationship with your audience.
Yeah.
And this is what is happening right now, that I think the streaming industry doesn't really work anymore. Like, you can't sell songs in that sense. Like, like back in the years, like 10 years ago, you would sell vinyl or you would make money from streaming or YouTube or something like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't really happen for everyone anymore. So what's much more important is like the relationship with your audience. Like, if you find your audience and you stay in touch with them through social media, through your newsletter, through concerts, through anything like that you have in mind, and you turn these fans into like your Patreon community or your Bandcamp consumers or something like that, then you become independent much faster.
Yeah.
And you don't need any labels or like people that open doors, because you are the door yourself nowadays. You can do it.
Yeah.
You can do that part on your own. And I think it's pretty nice.
Great. So I guess let's keep in touch and let's stay connected and let's give advice to each other and talk to each other and not be scared to talk of our experiences and support each other and consciously choose to work with people that support us.
Yes.
That we support as well. So thank you so much, Johanna, for today's conversation.
Thank you.
And the beautiful performance.
Thank you.
And, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks. See you next time.
Till next time.